Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:04 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 18th. I thought we'd kick off today with the MSCI World. It outperformed the S&P 500 during the period up to the peak in 2007. So it exceeded the peak in 2000, which the S&P hadn't managed to do. And the peak in 2015 was mildly higher as well before we had a dip in 2015-16. And subsequently, we've had a much more influential, I think, weighting of the US in the MSCI world over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. And the good part of the reason for that is because of the massive market caps represented by the largest shares in the US market. They are overwhelming the relative weighting of other shares in the index. Now, I think it's important to highlight that there was a very clear failed upside break at the beginning of the year, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, very impressive rebound over the course of the last 3 months, going from 375 to 550 is a really quite considerable rebound. And the index is now pausing. So when we zoom in and just look at the last few weeks, it's right in the region of the trend mean. And the reaction seen over the last week has been somewhat larger than any we've seen since the low in March, but not to any real great extent. And I think perhaps more important than that is that we do have ranges one above another. So while this one is a little larger, it is in the region of both the trend mean and the previous peak, so we might see some additional consolidation. But that is, of course, that conclusion is contingent on that psychological 500 point level holding. Now, we can then look at some of the global indices around which this broader global benchmark is based. The NASDAQ, for example, has been by far the best performer. It is still in the region of its peak and closed today above that psychological 10,000 level. One thing, there was a subscriber sent me John Arthur's piece, and he's talking about the potential for a double top. One thing that I do remember is that the same author was talking about a double top back in 2019 as well. So he obviously does like to talk about double tops, and obviously previous peaks are significant areas of potential resistance. And it is a logical point where people might begin to think about taking profits or asking the big question, what happens next? Personally, I was short for a few days because I thought that 10,000 would offer more than simply a few days of resistance. In the reality, it has represented resistance for about 5 days. I underestimated the extent to which the Federal Reserve and the US government were willing to step in and arrest any potential for a further decline. And now the index is back in the region of its peak. If it can sustain a move back above 10,000, then it would be very difficult to argue with the fact that we're not back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. The S&P 500 is also now, I think, consolidating above the 3,000 level. Now, it was in mildly negative territory in here today, but the most important thing is that having sustained the move back above the trend mean, it has found support in the region of it, and that is a bullish consideration. Then when we look at smaller caps, the Russell 2000 has not yet been able to push back up and into the overhead trading range. It's not back above its trend mean yet. It does, though, still have the sequence of higher reaction lows. This is a mildly larger consolidation, but not so much larger than that put in at the beginning of May. And as long as the lows hold, then I think we can also continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside there as well. The S&P 500 Banks Index is also back in the region of the upper side of that underlying range posted between March and May. If it can continue to hold here, then that is, I think, a benign sign that liquidity conditions have continued to improve. Now, when we look at the UK, for example, we're presented with a trend that is rather similar to what we see on the Russell 2000. It has not quite been able to push back above the 200-day moving average just yet. When we look at small caps in the UK, represented by the AIM 100, they are back above their trend mean. But I think it's also important to highlight that the sector halved between the peak in 2018 and the low in March, and it had come all the way back down to test the lower side of the range that prevailed between about 2010 and 2016. The subsequent rebound has been really quite impressive, and it is now steadying from the region of the trend mean. There is a lot of angst about what kind of recovery the UK is going to have, having missed the opportunity to get in front of the coronavirus. One redeeming quality is that the mortality rate is not nearly as high as people had feared back in February. So even with rising cases, there is still the potential that the economic impact will moderate. But unfortunately, the damage done to consumer sentiment everywhere is going to take time to recover. Then when we think about, well, what is the nature of monetary policy going to be in the UK? The pound has been weakening. The Bank of England is going to be buying $750 billion in gilts by the end of the year. They are very reticent to talk about the scope for going into negative interest rates, but the market has concluded that that is an inevitable move. The pound has fallen back to test the 110 area against the euro. This is a rather important level where it needs to find support. It's bounced on repeated occasions from this area over the last 4 years, and it's going to have to do so again in order to demonstrate that the low can hold and that this is still a ranging environment. The pound has also given up a lot of its gain against the Australian dollar. It had accelerated higher at the beginning of the year, and now it's given up most of it with the rebound in the Aussie dollar, which has now come back to test the sequence of the pound's higher reaction lows. So we're at a rather important juncture here too. Of course, the weakness in the pound is beneficial for larger caps, and they were down less than the majority of European indices in here today. Then when we look at the wider Eurostoxx index, well, there is also this very similar pattern to what we have on the Russell 2000. So this, I think, is one of the most important patterns to monitor. We've seen a significant number of instruments push back up to close their overextensions. They're back in the region of potential areas of resistance. The leaders have already broken out, and the clear willingness of central banks to do literally whatever is required to support prices is obviously one of the most important factors in supporting prices for just about everything. When we then think about how Australia has been performing, the ASX 200 was in negative territory today, but again, it is clearly demonstrating this rebound over the last 3 months and coming back to test the region of the trend mean. JD.com has been surging in the US over the last few days, and today was the first day that it traded in Hong Kong. There is a clear move by China to relist a number of shares that had listed overseas in Hong Kong, and the Hang Seng is starting to at least steady here. It has continued to hold the 20,000 level and has been ranging above it for most of the last 2 months, and we're seeing some steadying within the range. There's been a downtrend going on for 2.5 years already. It needs to sustain a move above the trend mean and break the sequence of lower rally highs. But with bigger companies coming to list, then that should be beneficial, regardless of the strife that's taking place on the streets. Alibaba has also firmed over the last couple of weeks from the region of the trend mean. That's an additional positive sign. And when we look at Tencent, we have a similar condition where it bounced from the region of the trend mean and is now back in the region of its peak from early 2015. And this looks like a large medium-term corrective phase within an otherwise bull market environment. We had a very substantial pullback in 2018, and it has rather admirably been able to push back up into the to test the peaks. And I think that the performance of these Chinese tech shares gives us an example of how companies can do well against a background of great uncertainty. And the outbreak in Beijing, which has resulted in a further lockdown and curtailment of travel around the capital, and certainly the people being able to move out of the capital, that can take place, and yet the stocks can still go upwards. There are obviously going to be additional stimulative measures coming through from China as a result of the further outbreaks. We also know that the number of cases in places like Texas and Florida and now also in California are rising, that it is going to represent an additional challenge, but perhaps most importantly for consumers. And consumer demand in China has not kept pace with industrial activity. And I think that that is potentially also what we're going to see everywhere else in the world, that industrial activity will be able to pick back up, but that consumer activity will still be modest because people will still have fear about the number of cases. Personally, I curtailed my visits to my gym before the lockdowns started. Now that the lockdowns have are starting to ease and they've started up classes again, I went to a few that were outdoors, but now with cases rising again, I don't particularly want to have an illness that's going to knock me out of work for a week. And quite and obviously, I think a lot of other people are in the same condition. So I won't be attending the gym for the next while, and I've personally found that a lot of the kinds of classes that I like to take are just as easily done online and via YouTube. Well, that's an additional point. It's one of the most important considerations that when we look at the cloud computing sector, it has pulled forward sales for. Just have to put in the correct ticker, but it has pulled forward sales from the next few years. And in that regard, we are in a situation which is quite similar to Y2K. Everyone is worried about the coronavirus and the impact that it's going to have on the global economy. And I think the conclusion is that it's going to be similar to Y2K in that it pulled forward a lot of sales from subsequent years. It inflated valuations in the period before the actual date. It created bubbly activity. It necessitated that interest rates stayed lower for longer. That all contributed to bubbly activity. It was, in fact, after Y2K had occurred and we moved into a period where it was all seen to be a bit of a worry about nothing. That's when markets started to significantly pull back because sales evaporated against a background of very high valuations. I think there is the possibility that that is also what we're going to have on this occasion, that we'll get to a point where we will have invested a ton of money in remote activities, in also in working remotely, in streamlining a large number of companies and portions of the economy. There will have been a massive increase in online activity in e-commerce. And when the coronavirus eventually blows out, whether that is the result of a vaccine coming, becoming widely available, or whether it is the result of people gaining herd immunity, or that simply the people just get used to the way of living and economic activity recovers, well, then we're going to have a condition where sales growth in some of these companies is going to moderate. There will be less need for it because people will start going back to work again, and the massive amounts of liquidity will be less necessary. The other significant risk is political polarization. The status quo, in terms of not that much of a difference between the left and the right, and the centrism that pioneered globalization, is now over. In the first instance, we had a lurch to the right, and now we're seeing a lurch to the left. And that is particularly relevant in the USA because it is one of the main political parties is now lurching very squarely into the radical left side of politics. Now, there is a clear risk here that taxes will rise if they prevail, that companies will become the target of rent-seeking activities, that regulations will increase. These are all, I think, relevant considerations that we need to pay attention to now, because there was a lot of fear in 2016 about what a successful campaign by a right-wing populist would result in. But it was beneficial for markets because the primary ambition was to cut taxes and deregulate. Well, the challenge from left-wing populists is that it will be about raising taxes and to regulate even more. And that is likely to have an impact on stock prices. So we do need to be aware of the potential risks that arise from political populism, not least in terms of governance, because the clear trend of improving governance depends on respect for property rights, an independent judiciary, and a free press. And the political polarization that has arisen over the last few years puts all of those factors in danger, which means that the trend of globalization is no longer improving in a number of countries, and particularly in the USA. And that being the case, then we need to be aware of the consistency of trends, the ability to continue to hold new highs as they break out, and also the outlook for the dollar, because it is likely to be a lightning rod for bearish activity. Now, the dollar has been steadying over the course of the last week, and it is unwinding its short-term oversold condition. It's broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. This is potentially a distribution before we get additional downside. The additional, I think, risk that we have in terms of political polarization should be positive for gold. It's important, I think, to look at the longer-term chart where we see clear resistance around the $1,800 area. We may see some additional consolidation, but as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, we're still in a bull market environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.